The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Football Daily. Today, six-goal thriller in Gdansk. Germany toy with Greece like Cristiano Ronaldo in his half-time break, but stroll into the semis, while Greek campaign, having gone on a bit longer than expected, ends with a loss. Bit like the names of their players. The pod salutes the eminence Greece and the preeminence Germans, and then looks forward to Saturday's set to Spain-France with Sid Lowe. All of that and more in today's Euro 2012 Football Daily. Oh, a lovely, non-specific, generic Eastern European scene. The birds tweeting. The James Horncastle.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's
he's
me.
Here.
Late night phone in.
Right, what? No, in your leather shorts and the bright morning sunshine, I think you're fine.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's the day. Well, you can't. Well, it's. Yeah, it's not grey here. It's a lovely countryside.
Oof.
Lovely setting.
John Ashdown.
Absolutely. Like the director of much of Euro 2012's TV footage of matches, I can see some great tits over there.
Oh, it's a bird joke.
A couple of finches as well.
And surely there's a gambling lamb down there, which brings us on. You know, it does. It brings us on to Friday night's big, big game in Gdansk. You know, in the...
Sorry.
Germany served up a lamb sizzler.
They were very impressive, yeah. The build-up was all political, and the match itself was a bit of a landslide victory.
Let's not do the politics.
No, let's avoid it completely.
Let's stay clear of that. I mean, it took a while for Germany to break down the Greeks, but they were so very effective by the end of it, weren't they?
Yeah, I think Germany just looked so slick. And I think before the tournament, Lowe was talking about... Getting the time between passes from 3 seconds to 0.9 seconds. And I think while you have to allow for the opposition against Greece tonight, they were pinging it around quite quick.
How many seconds do you think they were down to tonight?
I don't know. I say 1.2. I think they can still improve. There's always room for improvement.
That's interesting. So he's actually specifically targeted that, is it?
I think he wants them to aspire to do that. Yeah, I think he got his team selection spot on. I mean, he changed three of the four of his strikers. I think the rationale behind that was quite sensible. In that, you know, Gomez is usually quite a static forward, despite perhaps changing people's opinion of that in recent games. I think he went with players who could pull that Greek defence all over the shop, and players like Schürrle, Royce. And Ozil tonight was just fantastic, I thought. Played a part in Lahm's goal, played a part in kind of an indirect part, if you like, in Royce's goal. They really looked the part.
There was a lot of love for Greece coming into this game, John, but I liked your tweet midway through where you said, how could anybody want this Germany side to go out of the competition? Because they were a joy to watch.
Yeah, they are fantastic, yeah, and... I've got to the point, I think, in my football watching life that I'm kind of a little bit sick of the underdogs getting through. I used to be really, get plucky underdogs and let them give it a good old go. And now I'm sort of thinking I'd rather see the very best teams go up against the other very best teams. And there's no doubt that Germany are...
You think that's a stage in someone's football fan progression?
Possibly. Maybe I've reached...
In the same way that we all end up as Tories or something, is it?
Maybe that's what it is, yeah. Maybe I've lost a bit of the romance from my soul. But, I mean, watching Greece tonight, and you did sort of think... when it got to 1-1, you thought, well, maybe they could go on and nick it, and then you just face the same prospect of again in the semi.
All right, compare this game to Spain's matchup with Ireland. Spain, the obvious other big juggernaut in this competition. Which one looked most convincing, do you think?
I think Germany did. I think they've just got more firepower. I think, although we'll come on to Spain, I guess, a little bit later on, looking ahead to tomorrow, and they've got obviously a fantastic record in knockouts in the last couple of tournaments. I just think the way that Germany get through those gaps with them, they've got a little bit more physical dynamism in terms of their height, in terms of their pace. They're like the little spiders in Arachnophobia. And you think you've got all the gaps sort of sealed up against them, and they just come skittering through. But not quite, because they were quite lethal. So Germany actually needed a few bites tonight to finish it off. So like the only slightly, very, very slightly poisonous spiders in...
Conventional wisdom has it that these baby spiders hadn't got out of second gear.
It's true, though. So, I think what I quite like about this Germany side is that you see Jogi Löw making the most of what he has available to him. You know, I think the criticism of Spain against Ireland was that he, they used Torres instead of Fabregas, but he still left players like Llorente and Negredo on the bench. Hmm. And yet, you see Löw in a big game, a knockout game, not a group game, completely change his attack.
Yeah.
And
but he equally left, I don't know, Goetze, Podolski and Müller on the bench. So, again, plenty of... I hear what you're saying, but did Germany get out of second then finally today?
I think there was a bit of concern when Greece scored that excellent equaliser, which was, was a really fantastic counter-attack. I think at that moment in time, you thought the pressure might get to them, but instead they just rolled on and really then stuck the knife into Greece. Those two emphatic kind of volleys were woof.
What was the goal of it? Sorry, John, I was just going to say, which was your favourite? Was it the Khedira smash?
I think Khedira because both were so clean,
yeah.
But because I guess Khedira's came from open. Well, they both came from open play, but I think didn't Royce's come off closer, hitting a shot at the goalkeeper, rebound, and they just opportunistically whacked it.
My vote would go for Lambs. A, because he's a fullback, and B, because it was that majestic sweep of the ball as it
in the outswinger.
Yeah,
tasty
indeed, John.
I really like Royce's goal just because there was no need to try and hit it quite that hard. But I think the way that Germany played it was about as well. I know we're talking about not getting out of second gear or what have you. It's about as well as it's possible to play against a team that puts 10 men behind the ball. It's like there's a limit to how good you can look when teams do that against you. And they looked, the amount of chances they created before they scored, they were just so dominant in that opening 40 minutes or so.
Absolutely.
And it was great. I was really pleased to see him shuffle the pack, because you get all this fuss when you get squad announcements of the 23 and who's not been picked and who's in and all that sort of business. And then six or seven players don't actually get on the pitch in the tournament. You think, what was the fuss about? And then it's good to see a coach actually using his squad.
Well, they're through to their fourth straight semi-final of a footballing tournament.
15 consecutive competitive games. Between qualifiers and major tournaments, which is quite frightening.
Yet they haven't actually won a title.
No.
Since 1996.
Is it going to change, Jimbo?
I don't know. It's a lot of years of hurt. Can you imagine going that long? My word. Next up for them, of course...
England, apparently,
yeah. Yeah, there's a certain amount of assumption going on, but possibly rightly. I don't know. Sunday, of course, brings an England-Italy game, which we'll talk about again tomorrow, but there is a weird fascination to it. It is hard to not dwell on it a bit. What's the latest from the Italy camp, James?
Well, I think, leading on from what you were just saying, when we're talking about Germany, people are quite excited about watching them because they're not what people generally have come to expect from Germany. That in many ways, they play like what we expect from Holland. And the fascinating thing about this England-Italy game is that you could say that this England side honour Italian traditions more closely than the Italy side does. There was some press conference today. Gigi Buffon was speaking, and one of the interesting things he said was that one of Italian football's greatest qualities is that they always manage to keep it close. They're always in with it. But he also said that's it. It's probably their greatest flaw as well.
Mm-hmm. No matter strong or weak the opposition, it's always close.
Mm.
Looks like he's going to go back with the four at the back. And with Balotelli up front?
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting sort of parallels with Balotelli's tournament. He obviously scored that sensational goal against Ireland after coming on. Yeah, he'd been dropped, and then his celebration was to go off on one, basically, have his mouth smothered by Bonucci. It was very reminiscent of Mancini in Euro 88, when he scored his first goal for Italy ever, after, I think, 4 years after making his debut. Had been very heavily criticised, and no sooner had he scored it, he's running over to the press box, shushing. And, Mancini never had a very unfulfilled international career. And you wonder whether, will Balotelli follow that path?
Producer Ben just raising the spectre, and he's not the first to do so, of the penalty shootout. And of course, Italy, the side whose penalty record, at least until 2006, was even worse than the English one, but 2006 changed all that, really, didn't it?
Yeah, that Grosso.
What?
Delightful penalty. They've been doing their homework. That's been a lot of the focus in the Italian papers, looking at sort of England's penalty takers. And I was quite surprised. Milner's record is fantastic. I think, but Premier League, I think he's taken four penalty takers. I think when he was, he's taken four penalty. I think it was when he was at Villa and he was their designated take for a season. He scored four out of five. Pretty decent.
All right.
But will he still be on the pitch, I guess, if it goes to that? Because he's always been taken off, puts in a bit of a shift, looks knackered after 75 minutes.
Mm, yeah. Fair point.
I think if it's still 0-0, then he'll probably still be on the pitch, won't he? I think it's going to be an interesting battle of the wide players with Italy's fullbacks have, for me, been the best players in the team so far. And go on then.
Well, no, I was just going to say, which ones?
Well, who was it? I can't remember. The
last game
Abate
you went with Barzagli.
Side.
No, you went with Balzaretti and Abate.
Mm.
Previously, it had been Maggio and
Giaccherini.
There you go, Giaccherini. But not really as a more a wing back type thing.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. This sort of idea that if they play a back four, then they'll play with Abate and Balzaretti. If they play a back three. So with wing backs, they'll play Maggio and Giaccherini because I think Maggio can't really play in a back four. He hasn't played in a back four for a long time. He's played in that wing back system for Napoli for a long time, and the friendly against Russia where they did in the warm up game when they did play Maggio in back four, he got his pants pulled down. But in the paper in Corriere della Sera, there was an editorial where they were kind of going through the England and Italy squad's team player for player, and they were picking out England's fullbacks as being better than the Italian football. But they don't highly rate Balzaretti ahead of certainly Cole and Johnson as well, which was I found that quite strange.
Yeah, no, well, I think they're going to end up sort of quite head to head because neither of the wide midfielders. Particularly, well, Milner's on one side does, but Ashley Young doesn't on the England right, on the England left, rather. So, yeah, those fullbacks are going to be in sort of direct competition. You saw in against Ukraine how, was it Gusev, who caused all kinds of trouble down the Ukraine right. So that could be where the game's won and lost, I think. I don't think, people keep saying that Perlo's been having a fantastic tournament, but I haven't seen it yet.
I think he played really well against Spain in the first half against Croatia.
Free kick.
And then he looked knackered after that.
Well, the issue with the 3-5-2 in general,
all right,
is that it's very physically tasking,
right,
in the way that Juventus play it. But obviously Juventus haven't been used to playing three games a week. So so some of the players they may know how to play it, but they haven't had experience of playing three games in 8 days.
That's so very true. And yet I was surprised to read that Pirlo's actually played more games this season than any other member of the Italy squad because he's such an ever-present. Anyway, there you go. That's all by the by, or at least it has to wait until Sunday before we see who Italy... And who do you think is going to get through, John, by the way, Italy or England?
I do sort of fancy England to do it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. All right. Now, before that, Spain take on France. Spain, of course, European champion, world champion, absolutely dominant in their group as well, apart from maybe that last game. Things going pretty brilliantly for them. Probably they're quite happy back home in Spain. Let's find out about the mood of euphoria sweeping that nation with Sid Lowe.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
This will be familiar to you, James. Yeah. There's an extremely heated debate going on at my table in Ukraine between a couple of Spaniards and an Italian about the relative merits of Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho.
All right, okay.
The Italian, as you can imagine, is very, very much on Mourinho's side. And if I tell you that one of the Spaniards is Catalan, you can probably guess which side they're on as well. It's quite good fun.
Right.
And I'm in the middle, kind of doing the countdown bit.
Right. Yeah, I was hoping you weren't going to say that, Sid. I was hoping you were going to be all guns blazing on one side or the other and we were going to see you nail your colours to the mast. But perhaps that's for another time. Listen, is one of the topics that's being debated there in this fascinating roundtable that you're having Spain's chances against France on Saturday?
Of course it is, yeah. Of course we talk about that quite a lot. And there is... you reach a point, right, and I probably shouldn't admit this, at least not for the sake of the people I'm with. I think people reach a point, and my goodness, if you can hear the noise, it's because they've just walked out the restaurant, presumably for a cigarette, and they're still arguing. That's brilliant. Anyway, it reaches a point in the tournament where a lot of journalists just want to go home. So some of the Spaniards are now saying it would be quite good if the French beat us because we can get home. But the sensation, I think, is that France don't entirely convince, but that France are strong enough and have enough that they can without any doubt cause Spain problems tomorrow. Really, really interesting listening to Laurent Blanc today, because Blanc was talking about the quality of the Spanish side, and what was very clear was his belief that with Spain, you have to adapt your style, you have to be different, you might attack other teams, but you can't attack the Spaniards in the same way, and you have to be quite defensive against them. I was looking around earlier for the French for Park the Bus, which I assumed was Parque le Bus, but apparently it's Garé l'Autobus.
Right. That's probably a slightly dramatic interpretation of how France is going to approach this game, no,
of
James?
Of course it is.
James,
yeah.
Horncastle, what do you think the French are going to do in this?
I think in the press conference he was talking about following the model that Croatia used as being quite patient and picking their punches, which I think France under Blanc have tried to emulate to some extent the style that Spain have brought to world football in the last 4 years. But I think the sort of issue for France is the centre back partnership, because obviously Mexès is out suspended, but in comes Koscielny, who I think had some very good games against Barcelona in the Champions League for Arsenal. So I think some people are actually viewing that as a plus rather than a negative.
Just to pick up on Laurent Blanc, he was talking today. It was quite interesting listening to him, because he was raving about the Spanish, saying, you know, this is a really great side and a side that I absolutely love to watch. And at one stage, someone told him about the criticisms of Del Bosque, to which his response was, oh, please, you're not seriously having a go at Del Bosque in the way that Spain play. And he made a point which I did think was interesting. He said, look, normally I say that we should adapt as little as we possibly can to the other team. He said, but to Spain, you have to adapt a lot. And he said something which was striking. He said, we cannot compete with the Spanish for possession. And we have to be tight and as you say, the kind of the Croatian model. And he said, and so I said to him, I asked him about this and said, so what, you know, how difficult is it to adapt to this and to play a different way? And why is it that you can't just play your own way against the Spanish and you can against other teams? And are they unique in being the only team that always makes you adapt their game to them? And he made a really good point. I must confess, I've never really thought of it like this. He said, no, with every single game you play, you adapt to some extent to the opposition. But he said, when do you adapt in a match? You adapt when you don't have the ball. You adapt to them when they have the ball. So normally you're adapting to a team who maybe 50% of the time, or maybe 40% of the time. So the problem with Spain is you've got to adapt to them 70% of the time, because you know they're going to have the ball. You know you've only got a third of the game. And so you're forced into a situation where you have to be aware of them far more often as a proportion of the match than you would against anyone else. And I think the other thing he said, which is, again, is similar to the Croatia thing, he talked about effectively squeezing the game, making the game last a shorter amount of time. So for a long period of the game, the aim is keep in it. Mm. And then you can worry about whether you get the goal.
Well, to what extent is Vicente Del Bosque going to adapt his game plan to the French? For example, the whole kind of phantom centre-forward mystery, is that going to continue?
Very good question. And the reason it's a very good question is because Del Bosque said something today that I've not heard him say before. In the three games until now, and it's become the running joke, so much so that the guy who nearly always gets the first question in the press conferences always says, basically, hello, Vicente, good luck in the game tomorrow. Can you please tell us your starting 11? And, of course, everyone is hilariously funny, as you can imagine. You can tell how much cabin fever we've all got. Everybody falls around and asks this. And Vicente Del Bosque, in all of the press conferences, has said always, I know what I'm going to do, but I'm not telling you. Today, he said for the first time, I've got doubts. He described it as an internal debate, you know, between him and the staff about what they do. And it was very striking, because in all the other times he's been relatively clear. In fact, he's been extremely clear, but he hasn't told us, but he has been clear. This time, I think he's telling the truth. I think he really does have some doubts. I think he is wondering about whether or not he might, for example, put Navas on to open the pitch out a little bit more, whether he might put a different type of centre-forward on against the French. Now, I have no way of knowing what all of this means, because training sessions only give you a small glimpse of what you think you're going to see. But I do think there may well be a couple of changes tomorrow, which which, as I say, possibly, I would say there's a chance that Navas will come in on the right-hand side.
Interesting. There's been a lot of talk about the whole centre-forward thing with Villa being missing. The other big absentee going into the tournament, of course, was Carlos Puyol. And so far, his absence, am I right, hasn't been felt that much. But against a team with the attacking threat of France, that could be a key issue.
You're fundamentally right. It hasn't been noticed. They haven't played against teams that have destroyed them at the back. They haven't been caught out that badly. And also, you're right, because people haven't really talked about it very much, the absence of Puyol. But I think that if you start to pick through what Spain have done defensively, I think you ultimately, you start, you know, effectively kind of, you know, picking off the loose ends. You eventually come up with the mop-topped head of Carlos Puyol, because I think they've had problems at both fullback positions. And of course, one of those fullbacks is Álvaro Arbeloa. It would have been Sergio Ramos, but Puyol's not there. So that's issue number one. They also, I think, they're, and I hate to bore you with the sort of the boring tactical or technical side of it. They're not getting the offside line right. They're not stepping up at quite the right time. They're not in quite the right position, the back four. They haven't been caught out that badly yet. But one of the reasons why they're not is because they haven't got Puyol, who's a real leader in the defence, and I think takes other people, drags other people through the game. You've got two centre-backs, both of whom are brilliant in their own way, but neither of whom really lead a defence. And there seems to be a certain resistance towards Piqué taking on that role, and he's, I think, the most natural person for that role of leader of the back four, even though he's younger than Ramos. So I must say, I think they do miss Puyol, and I think there could come a time when they play against a really good side, or at least a really good striker, where that might well be problematic. As I say, you're quite right, no one's talked about it, you're quite right, they haven't been caught out yet, but I think there are signs that without Puyol, this defence is not quite what it was.
And, of course, they're facing a French team that has never lost competitively to the Spanish. The prize, though, a place in the semis against Cristiano Ronaldo. I bet that's got the Spanish excited.
Absolutely, it has. And it'd be very interesting to see who the Madrid press decides to support in the semi-final. Now, of course, on the face of it, there's no doubt about it, they'll be supporting the Spanish. But there will be a kind of a residual desire to see Ronaldo do well, which actually, to, up to a point, is natural. But yeah, as you can imagine, that really has got people excited. And some of the Madrid-leaning writers in the Spanish media have really bigged on Cristiano Ronaldo today, which again is entirely justified, because I thought he was sensational last night. That's huge, that potential semi-final with Portugal.
Sid Lowe. Well, hey, John Ashton, you've been doing notes and doodles all over the back of your... You care to share that with the rest of the class?
No, it's a flower.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's not a kind of tactical... For how you use.
No, it's not a zonal marking style, right. How France are going to beat Spain or anything like that.
Right. How are France going to... Do you think they will beat Spain?
No, I don't. I think if you look at Spain's record over the last two tournaments in knockout games, their record's played 7, won 7, scored 8, conceded none in knockout games, and I think it's just something to do with the way that they play against teams it affects teams in a different way in knockout matches than it does in the group stage games. And although, yeah, France have got a lot of attacking weapons at their disposal, I just can't see them breaking that Spanish stranglehold on the game.
Yeah, they are coming off that 2-0 loss to Sweden as well. Amazing stat I read today. Zidane's goal in the quarterfinal of the 2006 World Cup, that was the last goal that Spain have conceded in the knockout stages of a major tournament. No goals since then, since 2006. Mm. In 6 years.
Yeah. Did you just steal my stat then? No goals conceded in the last...
Where did you both find
it? Did you just say that?
Well, I said it in a different way.
All right. Well, I'm just emphasising your point. Anyway, James.
A bit to double back on that. No conceding. Yeah. I think one of the concerns for France is Karim Benzema, who's obviously had a fantastic season for Real Madrid, but he seems to have reverted back to being a bit of a cat again with France. He hasn't scored in any major tournaments at full level, Euro 2008, Euro 2012. And I think some people are perhaps waiting for him. He's the biggest star still in the competition who hasn't made a mark on it yet. I think some of his interplay has been good. Interestingly, a lot of the arguments within the France camp are based around the fact that Samir Nasri holds onto the ball too much. He'll carry it forward, but it'll take too many touches, and by that time the defences have got into shape and there's less space for Benzema to move around into. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are having this debate, is whether Nasri should be in the team. Because while someone like Ribéry has as many, if not more, touches than Nasri, he can actually beat a player on a one-on-one and create a chance, whereas Nasri can't. And I think that's one of the reasons why Benzema's struggling.
Is that the understanding of what the post-Sweden words were in the dressing room? Basically, Nasri saying, I didn't do too bad, and the rest of the team saying, you hogged the ball.
This was more a prelude of when Nasri scored against England, right, and he did the shush celebration at the press box. He'd been criticised for pretty much a year, constructively, for holding onto the ball too much, for pondering on it, and also kind of encroaching into other people's zones, stepping on other people's toes. And Nasri thought he'd ended the debate by scoring that goal. And the sort of dressing room divisions that have come up again in the Sweden game, where was Alou Diarra apparently came into the dressing room, said that certain players weren't pulling their weight, weren't tracking back. Nasri felt that he was being picked on. Then Blanc, while this all is going on, sees Hatem Ben Arfa on his phone apparently, and says to him, well, why don't you text your family while we're at it, eh, Hatem? Hatem doesn't take too kindly to that. His riposte was, there are other players on the pitch who stayed on the pitch who were worse than me, because Ben Arfa had been taken off. And Nasri, again, kind of apparently thought that was aimed at him. Ribéry kind of tries to play it all down. But yeah, I think Nasri seems to play the victim quite a lot in all of this.
Is he sitting on the wrong seat on the coach as well, or something?
He did that in Euro 2008.
He did, yeah.
And it was him before the Sweden game who was sort of speaking about this newfound unity that they'd got and how it was all changed.
Well, they all hate him, apparently.
Then the only unity is him with himself, and the rest of the squad are entirely united against him.
He doesn't. I'm always quite impressed with Nasri when he speaks to the media in English. I think his English is very good, and it's the same with AVB. When a foreigner comes and has a very confident grasp of the language, it can come across as they're showing off, because you know they can use big words and such like, and maybe they're not that arrogant. But I think with Nasri,
he may be a lovely chap, but he may be very arrogant, and they may be united. Maybe they got it all out of their system. Maybe, listeners, what is for sure is that is the end of today's Euro 2012 Football Daily, produced in conjunction with producer Ben, John Ashton, James Horncastle, Sid Lowe, the two arguing fellas in Ukraine, and me. We'll be back on Saturday night. John is back with us again as we see exactly what did happen between Spain and France, and look forward to the big one in Kiev, England and Italy. Woof. Have a super Saturday.